It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
Okay, so you're not going to spill your refresher.
Oh, geez.
Okay.
Yeah. There's still a huge stain on the floor.
Good morning, everyone.
I'm going to bring the carpet cleaner.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. Well, wow. Did spring come to
Woo-hoo!
Life this week? Actually took the top off the Jeep.
No,
okay,
didn't
take the total top off, just one half.
The front half.
No, like the driver's side. I have it so like my Jeep has the ability to take off the hard shell
right
on one side or the other or both.
Right.
Well, and I haven't switched to the soft top. I think I have to do that this year. I did not do that last
year. But if you're going to take the driver's side off,
yep.
That's kooky. You need to take both sides off.
Just take them both off?
Yeah.
I should have just done that.
You're just walking around
with this
block of sunshine shining in on you.
Like, as my friend, hey, you look like a chooch driving around with one half of the Jeep. Guy's a chooch.
I don't know if you can say that on the radio.
Chooch?
I have no idea.
Like, that's a
I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of that?
No.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, that the inside and the outside are just as important as the other, and I am going today, and Tom's going with me, and we are cutting down the two shrubs that I hate in front of my house.
Oh, that's
and it's going to look incredibly different.
It's very satisfying. It's like a haircut for your home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But like, my husband's out of town.
Just sometimes clearing is like a haircut for your house.
My husband is out of town, and so we're taking advantage of that because he keeps rolling his eyes every time I say I'm taking these trees out.
Mm.
And
just keep calling them shrubs because
shrubs.
He's like, honey, that shrub was 15 feet tall. It's still a shrub.
It's a shrub. It's a bush.
Define tree.
It's okay. It's ground cover.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. Listen, I've got a topic today that coming off my, I mean, man, I had.
You are AI crazy. Can I just say that?
I'm actually not. Okay. Time out. I'm not AI crazy. Okay, you make it sound like I walked in here with, like, you know, like 3D goggles on.
He did.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no, those are your glasses.
And I'm just artificially grasping at imaginary things in the air with my Oculus.
That you drove
my
here
Oculus
that way.
Glasses.
No wonder you only took one half of
the
top
case.
Off.
It's not the case. Hey, here's what here's all I'm going to say about today's show. This is not going to be an AI-dominated show.
Okay.
I promise you that. For those of you who would want that, and I highly encourage you to go listen to those two episodes. You know, your every day that goes by, every week that goes by, if you're not at least dabbling in these tools, the world is passing you by the same way the guy is brushing his horse and watching cars drive down the road. I'm just saying it's exactly the same thing. You just can't see it. Like you could, I'm sure, when the car was invented. But it's happening to you.
But the horses.
I need you to be aware.
But the horse's water pump isn't going to go down and cost me thousands of dollars to repair. How do you balance? That's my question, though. And we'll get to it eventually, I know.
I don't know.
How do you balance normal, traditional that works?
Old school, new school. That's what you're asking.
Right.
How do you balance old school, new
right.
school? Well, I think I'm going to dive into that a little bit with today's conversation.
Oh, okay.
Because we're going to have one of the things that I hope to demystify a little bit is this. You know, we're shaping some very large projects at the Design Coach, and we're so fortunate to even have the opportunity to participate in some of the projects that we do. I mean, it's really hard to describe, and sometimes we don't even like to totally share because we. You know, we just privacy concerns on the part of the client.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, this is their home.
Yeah,
it's not like
I mean,
we can give addresses
saying?
Out.
So it's like, you know, at some point you want to share, but you don't want to overshare.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, like I said, the clients are gracious enough to allow us to, you know, share photographs, not mention their names, but, you know, at least highlight the kind of work that we're capable of doing on behalf
and you know
of
what?
The client. And that's awesome. But
more so, it's you highlight the possibilities.
Oh, I like that.
It's not even, it's obviously showcasing your work.
Sure.
But it's showing people what they can do.
Oh, yeah.
What can be done.
I think that's the reason I'm in this business.
Of course.
Is not to do what's already been done. You know, that's why when I come to these areas and we talk about design, and for those of you who are new to the show, I rail on trends all the time, whether they're architectural or whether they're design trends. Even purveyors of the same style of home on the part of a designer or an architect, which we'll get to in today's show. I rail on it because the possibilities are too endless, too great, too cool not to explore.
Right.
You know, it'd be like moving to a really cool town and staying on your block.
Right.
Like, well, I just like this block.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to, I'm just going to hammer this block out.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep talking about my block. Just keep going around the block. Right. Talking about
the
same stuff.
When on just the next block.
It's like, but if you just go a couple blocks over, or God forbid, you head downtown.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah, brave new world. And I think that's the thing that makes it just too exciting.
Brave new world.
To not talk about is you're right, possibilities. That's a great segue. I love that you said that because I think that's an awesome segue because with the size projects that we're fortunate enough to on which to work, it requires this professional elasticity that I have never experienced before in my career. My responsibilities these days are as much financial as they are creative. They are as much architectural as they are contracting. And an understanding of how all of those things link together. And then think about this for a minute, Nancy. So take the architectural, the financial, the interior design, the contracting piece. All of those different disciplines that it takes to build something or create something or transform something big. You have all those different disciplines. Those are all different businesses, right?
Yeah.
And so they all have a complexity, a rhythm, challenges, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it takes really great partners in all of those different components of a project to get it to go.
The right partners, right.
Well, and then you all have to trust that hopefully the management of those people doesn't fall to the client, which can be a very stressful place for them to be because they're bringing it to life because of the financial. They're trying to provide the creative. And then you're also putting them in the position of having to manage
mm-hmm.
all of these, right, mm-hmm. different components of the project, which I don't recommend people do on large projects.
Right.
If you would like to do that on a bathroom remodel, great. If you'd like to do that on a medium-sized addition, awesome. Even on a new build, regardless of size, still very difficult to do and achieve without stress and pain. At the Design Coach, one of the things that I've been learning is our team's elasticity to glue all of those things together and get them to align is a massive, challenging, and daily and very rewarding exercise
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis. And it takes command of all of these things. It takes organization. It takes responsiveness. It takes an articulation of why. It takes a lot of coaching. Like there's a lot that goes into managing all of those components. Not to mention, then you have the entire client dynamic.
Right. We haven't even started talking to the client.
Yeah, all I did was say, oh yeah, architectural, design, financial, contracting. So let's get those cats all wrangled. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And now it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
Let's get all those kids playing nice. Let's get all those kids playing nice on the client's playground.
Okay? Yeah.
I likened it to that. I literally said the sentence this week, I cannot keep separating people on the playground of this project.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing that. There is more than enough, okay, opportunity. There's more than enough reward. Okay, just everybody do a good job and let's find a way to play nice together and collaborate. And that was a lot of what I've been doing lately, not just on a particular client, but a lot of these large projects that just require a level of coordination. And if you're not the one standing up to do it, the project just sort of spins off into, right?
It's like, who's going to be the jury foreman? Yeah,
side conversations. Right. And so you wrangle your arms around all of that. And I feel like there's a real value for clients there in what I do and what my team does at the Design Coach, where somebody has to be able to assume the responsibility for the effective communication and alignment of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be really, really candid with everyone. If you think that that's your architect, I don't know that I've seen that model be wildly successful on a mass scale. If you believe it to be your designer, that's a really difficult place to put most designers and certainly not what I would call people more at the decorator level, right? Where they're right. more involved in sort of decorating soft stuff.
Right.
You know, contracting can add a completely new dynamic to that understanding. So it can mm-hmm. be difficult, right, for some design professionals of a certain level to be able to handle those things.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly don't want it falling back to just your builder. right? To have to have to do that, right? Because sometimes the builder's looking for is looking through the lens of sometimes cost and timeline, and sometimes cost and timeline are really, really tough scalpels that can kind of carve away at creative opportunities. And they leave, you know, they get, you leave opportunities on the floor, cutting room floor, when you're moving too fast in the editing process, right?
So absolutely.
So you've got to have somebody who's fighting for the integrity of the design, the vision of the client. And then always when the client can't be there, and what I think we're really skilled at and what I'm loving these days is looking at the projects and the decisions in the client's absence through their lens and their eye.
But the only way you can do that is to really get to know your clients.
When you're aligned with them and you're nailing it, right? Like you're, and then also you're being transparent about what you're communicating. Like, listen, this is the conversation I had. This is kind of what I communicated. I just wanted you to be aware. And not having to have that via text or email, just a debrief. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just a quick synopsis. That's working really well, especially for some of my more executive level clients that really appreciate, like, you know, give me the synopsis, give me the highlights, you know, give me the challenges, and then, you know, then copy me on the email. And if I want to take a deeper dive, I can do so. And so that level of coordination takes time. And like I said, it's all absent of then the client dynamic that you have to manage, which is a whole different process.
The word that comes to mind that describes this to me is advocate.
Mm-hmm. I think you nailed it. I use that a lot in my terminology with my team. Like, was your action, was your communication acting in the best interest of the project and the client? And were you being their advocate? Because sometimes their advocate isn't saving money. Sometimes the advocate isn't getting it done faster. Sometimes the advocacy is, no, that's worth the money. There's value there. And I think that's the conversation I'm finding more and more people are really afraid to have. They want to have a cost conversation, and they want to have a timeline conversation, and they want to get it done too. But they're like the value conversation about like why something is worth something to you is the part that I'm finding in this process as I start to layer on my experience over 25 plus years doing this. What I'm realizing is that the value discussion and checking that down to a different pace to say, why do you want that? Let's take a deeper dive into that. And I can see why you value this. And I understand now why you don't value that. And now I can take that calculus, that equation to all of these meetings to be able to then calibrate the teams. So in other words, the client's not going to care about that. The client will care about this.
Right.
The client's going to care about this. That is something that they already understand. And so I feel like in this really litigious kind of environment that we find ourselves in these days where, you know, everybody wants to give input, but nobody wants responsibility, that putting yourself in the position of sort of putting your arms around the communication has revealed something at the architectural level that I'm finding very interesting. And it's I've had a conversation before on the radio with everybody about starting in the right place. This goes beyond that. This goes into how do you take a very large project, something that is really sort of jumbled in your mind, and how do you combine the right level of process, technology, and heart to be able to kickstart your project the right way? Because it makes all the difference. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Oh, good morning, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And in a round
of... I thought you forgot your last name for a second.
No, I have this exasperated...
I know it's been a week.
Sense of, well, listen, it has been a crazy travel week for me, right? So like whenever I...
I know it was nice of you to fly in this morning to be here because I know you did.
Listen, I'm trying to... I love the show and I... And
I know.
I'm grateful for the fact that you allow me to come into this studio and blather on like a middle child, right? As though there was like one listening and that one person maybe sitting across from me in the studio. So,
well, I got to tell you, ever since we bought the house, now I feel like I'm just getting free advice every week. So I'm good.
Love it. Keep it coming. Yeah, well, listen, I hope everyone feels that way.
Oh, I'm sure. Why wouldn't they?
When they tune into me. But I will say this. We're talking about this dynamic that I think is again, you heard me in the first segment when I opened to just talk about like how difficult that dynamic is. I also just want to reiterate how rewarding it is. It's a place of honor, I think, for us to be in that space. And I think I know this from coaching. Like, it's funny. I think the name of my book, when I write it eventually, mm-hmm. is like everything in business and in design comes down to coaching like a 10-year-old, like a football team of 10-year-olds.
Right. Makes sense.
You've got all of these kids who you're coaching who have different tendencies.
Like herding right? cats.
And there's mm-hmm. but you have to get them all to work in unison mm-hmm. to get a series of plays to work and to win. And I will tell you that I go back to this alignment piece. Football is like the ultimate training ground. The game of football and alignment. When you have a team that's aligned, strong, confident, powerful, and I get maybe that probably goes for any team sport, but particularly in football where it's physically demanding. Because listen, sometimes contracting, physical. You know, fighting through, creativity when you're tired, physical, right? There's a physical aspect to setting up the homes that we do that requires you to have to fight through. So there's a lot of analogies there.
I have one.
Yes, you in the front.
Yes. I had my hand raised. it's not, it's what you just said about the series of plays, because so many people think of it as a game, the entire game, and it's not. You have to be successful at the series of plays, at the little parts.
Yeah, you have drives.
Right.
You have drives. And to play out the analogy, you have drives.
Exactly.
You have your architectural drive, your design, your selection drive, your building drive, right? And I think the one thing that is, as a seasoned design professional and someone who had been a contractor for 15 years prior to doing design and an artist, we've learned over a long period of time to fight through project fatigue. And we don't get decision fatigue. We're supposed to help people get through decision fatigue.
Right. Keep them from getting it.
But that decision fatigue is a real dynamic that nobody really talks about in our industry, because a lot of times we get to the final vision that ends up in Pinterest or ends up on your Instagram or ends up on your website and the client's in the home and you end up like crossing the marathon and finish it, and you just collapse and you're like, you're depleted financially and you're depleted mentally but you're elated because you're finally finished and you're in the house. And that's all well and good, but it doesn't have to always be that way. You don't have to feel that way. And I feel like there's a lot of shoulder shrugging in like, well, that's just part of the process. Like, if you want to do big things, that's kind of what it takes. And that's true to a certain extent, but there are definitely things, as you were saying, throughout the drive, where if you call better plays with better alignment and more clarity, in other words, if the play is confusing, the players have a hard time running it.
Right.
If the play is too complicated, players have a hard time executing it.
Right.
Or even, not even executing it, understanding it. Forget about the physical piece of actually executing it in the field. Just processing it without moving.
Right.
To figure out how to get it done.
Yeah.
Is one of those things that I'm finding that our philosophy at The Design Coach of coaching people to good creative outcomes at this juncture is starting to know no bounds. Because it is touching contracting. It is touching financial. It is touching design, obviously. And now it's also touching architectural. And that's the piece that I want to focus on today, because, we've talked a lot about starting in the wrong place. Listen, if you start sometimes with just the builder, if the builder's built a certain kind of home, you're asking your builder to turn into stylist in the beginning of the process. And you're asking your builder to talk to you about flow of a home. Well, that's not the builder's strong suit. The builder probably has opinions and should have opinions on that.
Of course.
But that's not their expertise.
Right.
It's flow of the home.
Right.
Okay. Designing it and building it are actually two different exercises.
Very different exercises, though, honestly.
And that's not to say that there's not builders who are very good at that. But that's also not what they're in every day. Okay.
Right.
They're in a different part of the discussion. And I think that's where I want to start this discussion.
Yeah, they're execution.
Well, and they should be.
Yeah.
They should be.
They're physically executing everything that came, all of the decisions.
We designed a pyramid, build a pyramid.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I think at this juncture, where I want to sort of turn the conversation is back to the design and architectural right, phase.
The beginning.
Because I think there's this misnomer that, you know, that designers decorate. Like, I think that that's been sort of the shade that's thrown on the design professional end of things. It's interesting. And even I get it because, you know, right now there are some very, you know, Jonathan Adler. I don't know if you know Mary McDonald. Those are very famous designers.
I've heard of them because of you.
They don't have any formal training. In other words, I never went to design school. I didn't. I'm an artist who understands scale, composition, contracting. Like, I understand it all,
mm-hmm.
right? And from what my clients tell me, they believe that I'm able to dial into their style and their taste.
You're good at it.
And that they trust me, right? And so I, great. Like, that's just my complexion. And so it was really interesting to see that Instagram pop up of these really well-known designers who actually never went to design school. In other words, self-taught. Because I think that there's shade thrown there too, right? Like, I think there's been this degradation over time of the, oh, you're going to get your designer or decorator involved. And there's the eye roll. And listen, I think that there's, to a certain extent, there has been some validity to that. If you hire designers and design professionals or decorators who do not have construction experience,
right.
they're entering into a brave new world of things that they want to design on paper that look great that can't be executed in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And then you all talk about, you know, design professionals who are understaffed, who just want to take on a lot of projects and they can't execute them in the timeline of the build or the design timeline because they just don't have a team
right.
that they've aligned to be able to do big things we have on a national level. You know, very quietly, right, under the radar, this design firm of two or three has become a design firm of eight that's doing it all. I know how that sounds. It's not aspirational for anyone listening. It's happening and we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're delivering engagement parties for our clients.
Right.
And lifestyle outcomes that have nothing to do with design, but memories. And we're doing it.
Right.
We're catching maintenance issues in the field in support of the builder and in support of the homeowner. So that the houses can be fine-tuned after construction with our maintenance team. For everything from organization to cleanliness of the home.
And how many people do that? How many firms do that?
None that I'm aware of.
I mean, from nobody literally from the dirt.
Now, here's the thing.
To the engagement party,
for
God's sake.
But you can't hire me for just that. You've got to be our client.
No, it's got to be the whole thing.
You don't get part of me. I'm not a buffet.
No, a la carte.
You don't get the there's no a la carte at the design coach. I only need you for this. Well, if it depends on which part and do I have time, right?
Well, a lot of people don't know what this is. They think that it's just the visual part of it.
And to make my job even more challenging, they've never seen it before.
Right.
And so we go into this with one main understanding, advocacy for the client. And mm-hmm. that's where this discussion is going on architectural and design, just to make sure we're staying true to the show's spirit here, which is when you go about talking about what you want your home to look like, right? Like what are you thinking? Like it starts with a very open-ended question from the architect or the builder or the designer, and it shouldn't. Okay? It shouldn't start that open-ended, and it certainly shouldn't start with the cosmetic.
Well, I was going to say, when you say it's the word look.
No.
Like, what would you Mm-mm. replace the word look?
How do you want to live?
Exactly.
That's the most important question. And we are finding that, and Haley, I got to give her a ton of credit, you know, interior architecture graduate from Wisconsin, Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Did in conjunction with me a masterful job of interpreting a 10,000 square foot addition. And we started with the question, how do you want to live?
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to live? And from that came some very, really tangible examples.
I was going to say, what did they say?
Well, room descriptors.
Yeah.
About how they flow within a home and some various, and then they would get, it was interesting because it almost like I opened up the right, It's almost like your conversation sometimes I find, especially because I've sat through many architectural meetings. It's almost like a let's get to the point.
Right.
But, you know, you're the design, you're the, you know, you're there trying to collaborate with, you know, the architectural team. And, you know, sometimes on these large architectural teams, you've got three people sitting around a table, a draftsperson, a person that's, you know, doing documentation in the meeting. And then you've got the principal architect who's, and the questions that are being asked, or more importantly, sometimes the questions that are not getting asked, because sometimes these firms are so arrogant, institutionally arrogant, that they just assume you hired them for their thing.
Exactly.
That's, they view themselves more as artists than service vessels. I'm going to say that again. Artists more than service vessels, which is like, I'm trying to pour out my wishes and desires for the way that I want to live in this home. And can you help me interpret that into a style and a semblance of a design that fits me?
And not try to talk me into thinking the way I want to live will fit into their design.
Yeah, you just in a nutshell pretty much hit a ton of people's frustrations that if they're listening to the show and they've been through the architectural process without a designer, how frustrating that process can be sometimes.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying that the architects don't bring value or that some architectural firms don't bring a ton of value in that regard. I'm just saying that I don't believe it can be done irrespective of a designer and a design conversation about how you want to live.
Right.
When we come back from the break, we're going to dig into that very important question and how we actually reverse engineer that into the flow of a remodel, a new build, or any other large scale project you want to take on. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. This sports analogy is just so relevant. It's so relevant. I don't want to play it out too much, but good morning, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. We're talking about this process that I'm going to describe as pre-architecture.
But can we go back for a second?
Okay.
Okay. When you asked, how do you want to live? Mm. And we're talking about this 10,000 square foot, right? This 10,000 square foot build. And you at what was?
But it's
the,
not just the building. It's the deck.
It's everything.
It's everything. It's
right.
It's how the house is positioned on the property.
Right.
It's what are my favorite views? And listen, architects ask those questions, but that's different. That's positioning of the home,
right,
to take advantage of the landscaping. That's an element, but it's not the element.
No, but they're not asking how you want to live. That doesn't seem like that's an architecture question in the first place.
It should be.
Right, but architects have the capability of accommodating the answer?
The best ones
like
do.
A designer.
The best ones
like you.
The best ones do,
okay.
Or the best ones may staff someone on their team.
Okay.
Who does? Okay.
Okay.
That and honestly, when you're evaluating an architectural firm in that regard,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the top questions you should ask is, you know, if I come at you with a style you've never done before, how are you at problem solving and
True.
Interpreting my design? Give me an example of where you did a deviation of your particular style as a firm, and were you able to execute that? And that's a tough question, because if you've come at this architect, if you hired your architect for the look of that architect, you're already locked in
right.
to their process, their way of doing things.
And that's fine. If you really like it and you know that that's what the way you want to live,
it
then
is.
Then that's obviously
it
for
is,
you.
But then you're living, my argument there is going to be you're living in somebody else's then visual and style skin.
Right. But yeah, you have not taken advantage of the limitless opportunities that you have.
It's custom.
Right.
You know, you don't have the opportunity with most things like a car to do a custom car. You could, but like...
It's expensive.
It's
hard. Limited.
And honestly, there's still a level of production that goes into mm-hmm. cars that like you have to stay within a certain parameters.
Right. So you have to have four wheels.
Yeah, like homes and remodels, you know, there are some limitations there, but for the most part, it's however you
want
to live. How do you want to live?
Right.
Is really, I think, the most important question. Now, okay, well, what does that mean in the practical? Now, that's what everyone's going to ask me. It's like, okay,
right.
That sounds great, but like, how do we get down to really, You know, how do
well, that's my question.
How do we get to really understand?
How do they answer that question? How do you want to live?
They need to see it, and they need to see it quickly. Here's what I've learned. Everyone's afraid of producing a document that in the beginning elicits no's, because on some level they feel like they've failed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you're an architect or you're a designer and you throw a design out there, that's a very vulnerable place to live sometimes, because if you don't get the feedback that you want, okay,
mm-hmm.
there's sometimes a professional offense that they take. I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen them bristle. It's like, well, this was my work. Like, this is what I put together. And the client will say something, and then the client doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I mean, I have seen hundreds of thousands of architectural dollars spent because someone didn't want to hurt someone's feelings. You know, one of the things that we've recently been doing on the design side, and I will relate this to the shaping of a home, is we've been throwing out our inspiration imagery right. in the beginning and then letting the clients know it's okay to hate it.
Yeah.
I literally say that in my emails. Hey, I'm gonna take a shot at what you've done, and I'm gonna try to interpret it. And it's probably gonna be, it could be wrong. And your no's, this is what I say to them, your no's at this juncture are as validating as your yeses.
Mm-hmm.
I do not bruise. I want your feedback. I wanna hear what you're loving and not loving, and also what you're open to, because you wanna hear more from me. But maybe you've never done it before. It is a very, it's such an inviting place to right. be creatively with your client in the beginning.
Right.
Because there's so much institutional arrogance that does come along with my business. You know, listen, my business is full of egos. Contractor's got the egos. The builder has the egos. The designer has an ego. The architect has an ego. Everyone has an ego.
Lots of industries.
And listen, if you're good, you're going to say you're good, but you shouldn't be rigid, especially not in what I believe to be, for most people, is one of the most important investments they're ever going to make, is like a custom home or a mm-hmm. large investment in a remodel.
Yeah.
And so it should be in the beginning one of those things where you want to be able to creatively court them. Does that make sense?
Yes. Like
you're courting. You're throwing, you're being very accommodating. You want to hear more. It's like, you know, you in a way, you're creatively dating.
You can't put the puzzle together.
You want to hear their good ideas. You want to hear all that stuff. Like,
right. You can't put the puzzle together without all the pieces.
And you can't put it together without the broken pieces.
Right.
Because I've got to hear where you think you failed.
True.
And I get to make, I sometimes will have to make a determination as to, well, you didn't really fail there. What you did is you just didn't take it far enough.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That has a lot to do with color scheme and other areas. But I will say that in this beginning stages, I'm going to apply that same principle, whereas your no's are as good as your yeses. I'm going to apply that same open feedback conversation. Like, I've opened the door to you criticizing my work. You know why? Because you giving me feedback, you criticizing my work only helps me get it right for you.
Right.
When you pitch it that way, and then you back it up with a process and a posture. I'm going to say that again. You back it up with a process and a posture. You can't pay lip service to it.
Nope.
Because people sniff that out. Like, they know when you're not really listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
They know when you're not really taking their...
It's gaslighting.
Yeah, they know when they're doing that. They're
right.
We're kind of all in tune on that. But when right. you're being genuine, and they know that you can kind of take a blow, and you didn't take it personally, you're just trying to help get it right, that is such a free and creative space to live in, because it's at the heart of true collaboration. Is not getting offended by someone else's suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was, is we decided to turn that same lens onto what I call pre-architecture. Pre-architecture is before you go to your architect to have them put in the windows, the mechanicals, the structural, mm-hmm. like the foundation, like any construction docs. You're working through with the client what room makes sense for you in the right place. And I'm telling you, Nancy, that is different for everyone. It's different for everyone.
Absolutely.
It starts with an understanding of the buildable footprint. With this particular client recently, and there were two, but this one recently, they were thinking about remodeling a certain home that was under a certain footprint. And when we did the exercise on paper, we got the layout that we wanted, but we found out that the layout that we wanted wouldn't work. with the remodel of the particular footprint of the existing home.
Hmm.
So we realized we needed to shift away from that property and do something different. We didn't say, what will the property allow me to do? Like, there are some limitations to that, and that makes sense. But you shouldn't sacrifice the way you want to live in your home. That calculus you've got to figure out in the beginning.
Right.
Then you can massage it to the property. And this is where I think I would probably get into an argument with architects. Like, no, you know, you build based on the sight lines and the lighting and all the and the views and the this. And it's like, okay, I get that. We want, you know, we know we're not living in a prison. We get it. Like, we understand we're not building a penitentiary. Okay. I get that. But at some point, the flow of the home and the way the client moves organically through it, okay, is not more important than the way the house sits, but it should be the first conversation. The first conversation is, how do you move through your home?
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to live? What have you always wanted? What don't you have now?
What do you have that you don't want anymore?
Not how does it look?
Right.
Because what I'm finding, as I and again, this is just, again, I can tell you that after speaking to professional after professional after professional across the board, I don't care if it's builders, contractors, I don't care if it's designers, I don't care if it's architects, they're all sort of quietly saying the same thing. That the process, clients are kind of starting in the wrong spot. And there's a lot of finger pointing going on.
Right.
Right. Well, it's this. It's the designer. Well, it's the architect. Well, it's the builder. They didn't really. And you can't have that if you're gonna really successfully explore all of the opportunities stylistically and functionally in this biggest endeavor of your life.
Right.
Like, do you want to leave that to a flawed process, knowing that there's already going to be flaws? Like, it's already a hard process to go through because you're going to hit challenges. But if it's flawed from the beginning, it's almost like the red flags in the beginning of dating somebody. You're like, oh, okay, well, you know, am I going to change her? Am I going to change him?
Yeah, you can't fix them.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot, and the reason I make that analogy is because it's so intensely personal.
Right.
And then we try to put up this transactional veneer, which doesn't really work because you're building a home. You're not building an office building or a strip mall.
Right.
You're building a home. Which is an intensely personal concept.
You want to, right. I mean, the feelings about your home are so widespread.
I can't tell you how great it was to when I sat the clients down early in the process and I said, listen, I said, I'm not going to pull out any pieces of paper. We're not going to draw right now. We'll draw in a little bit here. We'll get to that. But tell me why you want to do this. Mm-hmm. I even went back to not how do you want to live. I went to why do you want to do this? And it's been interesting. I recently, when I came back from Florida, I was sitting around with a client of mine and we were talking about, I mean, I'm on my fourth home with them.
Wow.
We're doing some additional work in their home in Florida and they're dear friends and awesome clients. And I said, well, you know, you guys, you know, they're getting reflective, right? They're, mm-hmm. you know, in their late 60s, early 70s. And
they're young.
Yeah, but you're kind of in legacy mode after 50. You know, you start mm-hmm. thinking about that kind of stuff. And I said to them, I go, you know, you guys should be very proud. You've built and you've remodeled homes your kids want to come back to and visit. And they live all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that your kids wanted to come back twice this year, right? From the various places. The fact that they feel like when they're missing out, that there's FOMO,
right? Right.
Fear of missing out, right? That there's FOMO when people are getting together, like that's how connected. And I said, you guys should be very proud because that from the beginning was your goal. Their goal in building one of the homes that we did for them up here was a place where the family could come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And we designed it that way, right? Mission accomplished. So as you roll back and as we head into segment number 4 of this pre-architectural conversation, it's important to start with the right questions. And those questions get at the heart and soul of why are you doing it and how do you want to live? Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to put that on paper and we're going to talk about process and posture. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. I love my job.
Yeah?
It's so hard.
Can I just say this?
I work every day of the week. It's hard, but I truly love it.
Is it really a job if you love it that much?
Yeah, it's a job. It's hard.
Oh, okay.
No, you're right. It's not a job.
It's not a job.
It's a calling.
Yeah. It's your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's you know, over the amount of time I've been doing it, to be able to share the moments like I did with my clients this weekend and to just have the experiences that I have, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I try to do when I come to these areas, and good morning, everyone. You're listening to segment number 4 of The Design Coach. Wish I had 5, but I don't. Right here on Link 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And as we talk about the inherently flawed process that is home building and remodeling, and everybody's pitched to try to tell you how they're going to make it painless.
There's no such thing.
But sometimes making it painless means that you haven't put in the effort to really craft something special. I'm going to give you an example of when I talked before the break about process and posture. Remember when I said if you're going to be vulnerable and you're going to be open to critique and criticism and feedback, you got to mean it. You have to mean it, because I think a lot of people pay lip service to that and they don't really mean it. And I will tell you, one of the training grounds for this for me was when I was in art school and you would throw up your weekly drawing and there would be a class critique.
Right.
And you would have students in there who liked you, who would say nice things about your work. And then you'd have students who you were at odds with and you just didn't get along and they would rip it. What I learned from that exercise is their critiques, even though there wasn't, maybe all of their comments weren't spot on, there was always something to glean.
Right.
And you learned to toughen up emotionally, to have the conversation about something really as really subjective as art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you learn to have to fight for your creativity. And people, they don't really want to do that anymore. And so and sometimes it's really necessary. You should fight for alignment, but creativity, you should have willing partners, okay?
Well, my question though is it that they don't want to or they think they can't?
Maybe both. That's valid. Maybe both. However, when you open the door, like I just talked about, where you're like, I want to hear your feedback. Your no's are as good as yes's. The minute you do that, what's really important is for you then to back that process up, okay, with show me.
I feel like because empowering to the client.
Oh, here's what's empowering. They're hiring me as the design coach and as a designer to help them envision, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had to give me one main goal, I help them envision.
Right. Help them see the future.
And then from being able to envision, I give them creative confidence.
Right.
Even to the point where I give them creative confidence to say yes to things they would never normally choose. That's the magic.
Right.
You got it?
Right.
I help you envision. If the vision that I present in the beginning isn't to your liking, that's okay. Help me get it right.
Give them a permission.
Yeah. Help me get it right.
Right.
I can't tell you how disarming that is for the clients these days to sort of have that posture in the beginning, because I'm not trying to sell my look.
You don't have
a
look.
Now, let's back this up. The rigidity that exists in architecture and design is because a lot of architects and a lot of designers are trying to sell you their look. And they're arrogant enough to think that you hired them because you're blessed to have their design in your life. I'm going to flip that. I'm going to say I'm blessed to have you bringing me this opportunity to serve you creatively, to build something special with you.
And again,
that's a way different posture. That's when I talk about process and posture. Posture can't be you're lucky to have me.
No.
Posture needs to be I'm super thankful for the opportunity, right? But help me get it right. So it's a balance point.
Right. But if we're talking about this in general, like if we just move this to general business terms,
yep.
That's how everybody in the service industry should be treating their clients and customers.
Do they?
No.
Do the majority?
No. And that's what I'm saying.
Do a lot of them pay lip service to it?
Right. Like what you're saying can be applied to a lot of different industries, not just yours.
But your mission statement means nothing if it's not in practice.
If you don't do it. Right.
You don't do it. Right.
That's not a mission.
So what we started doing on the pre-architectural is very interesting. I started doing the same thing that I would be doing for my creative exercise for style. I do a materials mood board A lot of designers do that to get feedback. But what I do is I give the client multiple design directions to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to test their elasticity of, you know, how elastic are they with what I'm going to call the eventual pivot. Because it's not just about the process. That has to be good and timely. We'll talk about that in a minute. You have to have a great posture, which we've already talked about, which is you're there to serve.
Right.
Right. But you've got to be able to be versatile. And you got to be able to pivot.
Because they're going to tell you.
You have to adapt. You have to adapt to their, I was thinking about this overnight and I don't want this. Now you can, as long as it comes back to that's in alignment with our greater goal. And when it starts to become scattered thoughts, that's when you have to sit them down and go, we're not going to move any further. If you're going to pivot on 8 styles. I mean, if they start with English country and then they end up in mid-century modern. Okay, then we probably shouldn't have even been put in the same room together. We should have. How about if we hash that out before you come see me?
Right.
I do ask you to do some basic homework before you come see the design coach.
Right.
At least know generally, you know, with some
sometimes,
words.
But there's sometimes you have to save them from themselves.
Well,
and get them back
on
focus.
I think good professionals give really kind but firm guidance there.
Right.
And I think that's what we're getting known for.
Right.
Is firm but kind guidance in those situations.
Right.
I will say that, and also where we're at fault, you know, where we've missed, it's important that you own that too, you know, on a deadline or not really putting into the vision something that they had requested. That's right. Big too, right? But when I get back to the process piece in this, the process piece and the envision piece is the piece that you wouldn't normally think a designer would get involved in the flow of the home. Well, we've recently started doing pre-architectural home layouts.
That's awesome.
Which means... we're saying to you, okay, right now, let's just talk about a general buildable footprint on this lot. Let's just talk in general about some of the outdoor and indoor amenities that you want, whether it's an indoor pool, an outdoor pool, or like big things right now.
Right.
Like, I've always wanted this, or, you know, what special amenity are we trying to account for?
Yeah.
The most important thing in the beginning with your designer, especially to calibrate me on where you want to go and how you want to live and how you want the home to function, is to talk about how the rooms connect. Is this room too far from this room? How do you want to live within your home? And it doesn't talk about room size at that juncture. You're not there. You're just talking about the flow of how you every day would want to use it and then how you might use it for special occasions and how you might use it for family. I can tell you it has been frustrating over the years to be left with when they bring the designer in too late in the process. Like, you're already under foundation. I can't shape the room anymore.
Right.
For me to say, well, your architect thought that bedroom at that size was going to be great, but you only get one nightstand because you can't put one next to your closet.
Right.
I can't tell you how many times I look at architectural plans that have very weak mechanical notes on things like electrical. And I have to issue SKs and sketches to be able to, I don't know, you know, get the builder up to some sort of speed on the client's expectation of lighting, which, by the way, in a home is huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how placeholders drive me bananas that the architects put in where they thought every room needed a ceiling fan. Right? Like I'm just pointing out some really, obvious ones, right, that are just sort of out there that we've encountered. And listen, I could go on and on and on. And then on the other side of that, how some architectural plans are so complicated that the builder says, I don't even think this is possible, only to then go on the job site to literally tell the field architect who's making a field visit that their math didn't work and it worked on paper, but it's not going to work in the field. Here's what I'm trying to express to everyone. The more upfront planning you do with the person that's going to be with you through the entire arc of this project, which most of the time is the designer or should be. Remember when I say dirt to drapery? It's even before that. Mm-hmm. It is now paper to drapery pin.
Right.
What we did for this particular client is I have to say that our pre-architectural understanding of the flow of the home, room sizes, when we pitched 3 versions to the client, we probably truncated an architectural process that would have taken 3 months into maybe 3 to 5 weeks. with three meetings
mm-hmm.
that were probably less than an hour and a half. Once we've hashed out the flow of the home, approximately the buildable footprint, we then brought the builder in and said, okay, vet this pre-design. It's called a pre-design. Vet this. Maybe four or five mechanical changes.
Mm-hmm.
Some really, really good suggestions on if you're going to do this, do this. It was great. It was just great to see the builder, A, love the plan, understand how to shape it, and then gave them a chance before it got final to actually do it. And we were able to issue revisions, not in three-week increments like a lot of these architectural firms like to do. We were able to issue these in three-day increments, a week increment, and a much more client-friendly pace. Because when too much time passes between these meetings, clients go on with their life.
And they get frustrated.
And it's hard for them to pick it back up.
Right.
Creative momentum. When I talk about process, process also has a partner. And process has a partner, and it's called pace. I'm going to assume that your process or your posture is good. You know, you're being an advocate for the client.
Right.
You have that posture. And then you got to have a good process. And then you better deliver. And you better have a pace. Because if you keep the client constantly engaged creatively, there's a bond that develops. It's so healthy.
Yep.
And then it makes everyone's job down the road easier from the builder. Because what's going to happen now is we're going to say the builder who I know is the right person to shape this clay in the field with me, and I have pre-architecture, I'm like, okay, now we already engaged an architect, but now we're going to give it back to them, having done a lot of that homework. And we're going to say, hey, the architectural team, now add in your additional elements, right? And your conversation, but what we're not going to allow them to do is completely change the heart and soul of the way the house already works for the client on paper. Can't tell you how many times clients are like, we're on our, I don't know, year and a half of architecture, and we're still trying to come up with a floor plan. And, you know, I mean, we're talking architectural fees in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, on these luxury homes. I mean, it is a real problem, because I think so many of these specialty industries have gotten so bloated with process and so institutionally arrogant that they forgot how to serve the client.
Right.
Pace, process. Right? As a tandem with good posture, allow you to pivot, because you've already had these conversations with the client and you know that small pivot, if it's a big change, it's a big change. You can explain that. But sometimes clients will leak you the last little bits of thought to be able to refine the clay into a statue. This pre-architectural phase, I'm going to report back to everybody periodically about how it's going, but I think it's a really important process, especially if you have someone on your team who has interior architecture experience like we do. Being able to shape that flow and room size from the beginning and then give that guidance to the architect versus working it the other way around versus just being settled with the canvas the architect gave me, that's not true custom. So I'm gonna employ the industry. Architects, ask better questions. Produce better plans.
Faster.
Yeah.
People are impetuous. They want it now.
Yeah,
they
and it's not gonna waiting. Get listen, and this is not gonna get easier. The clients want it, and I'm gonna tell you, I keep hearing this over and over and over, and I see it. It's not the smartest people or the most talented people who win. It's the people who can implement the idea the fastest and figure it out on the fly sometimes. Okay? The people who can get the idea implemented are the ones that are going to be valued. And everyone else is going to look really slow and archaic. That's my only AI tie-in today, is at the end of the show. Okay? is that the ability for you to lay in an architectural home flow that makes sense based on your needs, that's coming. It will change architecture. It will change visualization and design like we've talked about. And it will change building. Not the fact that someone still needs to do it, but it'll make it more efficient. So why not start with the right conversation to kick your project off the right way? How do you live? Right?
Right.
How do you live, and why are you doing it? Anyway, thank you for joining us on this Sunday morning. Oh, that was fun. Anyway, have a great Sunday, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. You've been coached.